What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
The football pod with Paddy and Andy.
So the young guy on it that was on the under 20s last year, he turns around to me halfway through the game because you're too old. I was like,
he was back. You're his coach.
Tell me you dropped him.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetsetGo. Quick start car insurance that's ready when you are. Sort your policy anytime online at getsetgo.ie.
OTB AM.
With Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
7:30, you're welcome along to OTB AM. It is Owen and Adrian with you right the way through until 10 o'clock this morning. And for the third consecutive morning, we have an Irish medal to tell you about at the Olympic Games in Tokyo. Aidan Walsh, the man overnight who won his bout in the quarterfinal to qualify for a semi-final and guarantee himself of at least a bronze. He is going to be fighting again in the early hours of Sunday morning. So that's three medals in the bag for Team Ireland at Tokyo 2020 so far. Still to come, we have Kurt Walker and Kelly Harrington who will be well within a shout of grabbing a medal as well. We've got Reese McClenaghan's final in the pommel horse still to come. And of course, there is the golf. People who've been up early this morning will know that Ireland are well in contention in the golf at the moment. Rory McIlroy on 8 under par, Shane Lowry on 7 under par after 17 and 16 holes, respectively. The leader, Carlos Ortiz, is on 9 under par. So tomorrow into the third round, we will certainly have two Irish golfers well in the hunt on that front. So at London 2012, Ireland won 6 medals. In terms of volume, not in terms of gold medals, in terms of pure volume of medals, that is Ireland's best ever return at an Olympic Games. So in terms of volume, it is very much achievable that Ireland could match that now at this year's Games. So a very positive start to the weekend, Adrian Barry.
It's absolutely class. And looking at the, I was up, got up for something again last night on, in the middle of the night, obviously. And it's brilliant. It's just brilliant to look at when they're doing so well. It's such a great bounce. They're such great characters. Like looking at Kelly afterwards, I nearly called her Katie, and she's headed in that direction by all accounts. Looking at her during the fight, how composed she was and controlled she was, picking out her punches, and we'll get into the technicalities of Ronan later on, but looked like a real technical masterclass, and probably to the same degree with Aidan Walsh a bit later on. But yeah, just like savagely clinical stuff, like non-emotional stuff even afterwards from both of them, and Aidan Walsh in your interview afterwards is one of the highlight of the games, I have to say, for me so far. Brilliant.
Yeah, that's one of the key things, is that himself and Michaela, just even if you just keep it to that family just for a moment, are two of the most likable Olympians Ireland have ever had. And then you throw Kelly Harrington into the mix as well, and you're just rooting for her at every step of the way. Like, I think Harrington, almost in her post-fight interview, there is a temptation to try and get her to speak about the real medal hopes that she has and how far she can go into this tournament. And she's got no interest in talking about it whatsoever. I'm not sure, is it the delay to the games maybe? Is it due to the fact that she's had to wait so long, even before the delay to this game, to actually be a representative for Ireland? But God, she is in the zone right now. She has no interest in any distraction whatsoever, and even entertaining the possibility of talking about a medal bout or any of that nonsense right now. She is here and is trusting the process, to use that phrase, at the moment, and she's totally dialed in.
Yeah, and that's the way to do it. And you're absolutely right. Like, looking at it last night, and she had obviously got a buy into the round of 16. She had seen some of her main competitors, including, you mentioned, Dubois there. And I read a piece with her in The Guardian during the week. And really, somebody who Kelly Harrington has beaten really recently in the European qualifiers, but somebody who was really big hopes here as well, and like much younger than Kelly Harrington, let's say. But yeah, certainly, like, people who haven't seen the fight last night might be sort of waiting to catch up with her. It was just, she was really dominant throughout, wasn't she? She controlled each round, was always ahead in the scorecards. It was one of those that was never really in doubt. Like, I know Aidan Walsh towards the end of his fight was, they were, the commentator was saying that, you know, the referee was kind of giving him a bit of a finger wagging as to stop running around the ring necessarily, like looking at your head and there's medals on the line. You're going to do whatever the hell it is to get you over the line. But no, not with Kelly. She was really controlled. So we'll see. Like, there's just big few days to come. And the boxing team particularly, like, I remember over the previous few Olympics on, like, the team, we obviously had big teams in. They would progress. And as it was, like, they almost progressed in a very linear fashion in that, like, you know, you've had six going through and then one or two would get knocked out and then three or four would advance and one or two more would get knocked out. And it kind of followed that pattern. But this Games has been a little bit different in that we've had, you know, a big amount of fighters exiting early on. But it does look as if the cream is rising to the top, hopefully, over the next few days.
Absolutely. And we've had the athletics up and running as well overnight. We're going to be joined by Cathal Dennehy from the Olympic Stadium in Tokyo very shortly indeed. But the main news really there is that Ireland's three hopes in the 800 metres all failed to get out of their heats. It was always going to be an incredibly difficult task for all three of them. I think the most disappointed out of the three of them would have been Nadia Power, because she ran a little bit off her own personal best, and you could tell in her interview on television afterwards that she was disappointed. Now, in fairness herself, Louise Shanahan and Shifra Cleary-Butner all did well to be there and are all kind of bolters when it came to this team, certainly in the context of the Games being pushed back and the Games happening in 2021. So their eyes will certainly be on bigger things at the next Games. But even within the context of this, I think you could tell from Power's reaction afterwards that she was there to compete and there to try and qualify, and she fell short of that. Tom Bardo showed up. He was in the lane right beside Carson Warholm for his 400 metre hurdles heat, which is an unenviable position to be in. We'll get Dennehy's take on that about, actually, is that an unenviable position to be in? Because, you know, he's going to be the guy setting the pace anyway. And once you're on his shoulder to a certain degree, you know, you're going to power through. But he had to kick on quite a bit in the last 100 metres to ensure that he got second place in his heat to get a good draw for the semi-finals. And he'll go again in that. But it's an unbelievably stacked event, the 400 metre hurdles, and getting to a final from Tom Barr's perspective will be a really good result. In the sailing then, just to move it away from the athletics, Annalise Murphy finished 40th in race 10 in the laser radial. So as you can imagine, that is not going to be good enough to get her into position in the medal race. She has finished 18th overall. The top 10 get into the medal race. So I think Annalise's poor start and that unfortunate kind of tangling with the Fijian boat on day one has ultimately cost her, because she had a brilliant day yesterday, and maybe if she'd started better and finished better and with a bit more fortune, she could have made it into the medal race. And then the 49ers, Rob Dixon and Sean Waddilove, were 9th in race 9 and 14th overall. They have three races tomorrow now, and they'll be doing the exact same thing. Try and make it into the top 10 and try and make it into the business end of things there. The other thing overnight that a lot of Irish eyes will have been on was the hockey, Ireland against India. India won the game 1-0 and probably deservedly so. They could have been in the lead at halftime. Aisha McFerrin, the true possibly world-class player that Ireland have, was the saviour once again. She kept the score down against the Dutch a few days ago and she was brilliant again in the first half. But India did find their winner in the second half. And Ireland will now need to beat Team GB tomorrow to get through to the next round, which is what you want, Adrian. You want just those high stakes and a little bit of magic dust on that event tomorrow. May as well lose to India tomorrow to ensure that Team GB game is a do-or-die game.
Yeah, we'll see. Like, it's been actually, even when you mentioned the sailing there, it's been a tough, it's been not been a great Games for the viewer at this end of the world. And I know that some of the athletics obviously will slip into a point where people might actually be out of the scratcher and won't have to get up in the middle of the night. But like, I remember the way that we followed Annalise, for example, at the previous Games, and you knew it inside out. We were joking about it at the start of the Olympics that you knew about the upwind and the downwind, and she should have taken the lee side or whatever it would have been. And it's just, we haven't had that same investment, and we're not, it looks like maybe going to have it now from that performance last night. She's been, I mean, I'd be interested to hear from her afterwards and get her take on it and technically why it all fell the way it did. But she's been, like, from the highs of finishing in the top five across a couple of races to been right out of the mix, it must be an incredibly tough, it must have been an incredibly tough Games for her. And the golf as well, and the lads have wrapped up there just in the last, well, Lowry's actually playing the 18th, but following Rory McIlroy is when you're invested in wanting to do well is a tough thing to do, and it has been across his career when you're standing over putts that you think he should be getting and he's just not nailing them. And it's been kind of the case for him again this morning, but he, including a bogey now on the 18th, he had been one of the best rounds of the day, and it still is on 500 par, the 66, but he's home on 700 and that's three back now from the Mexican leader, and Lowry's on the same score playing the last. So look at their two of them very much in the mix. And like, you know, if they're in the melting pot come Championship Sunday on or whatever it is that I presume they it'll follow the same type of schedule, will it? That, you know, I presume if I'm a golfer, if I'm part of that committee, I'm like, listen, follow the same schedule. So it will take on, that will totally take on a life of its own, won't it, come Sunday then, if the two lads are in the mix and suddenly a sport that we didn't, I mean, did we really care about it that much until the two lads were in the mix? Suddenly we've all got our tricolours out and we're going for it on Sunday.
I'm not going to lie, the golf at Rio 2016 didn't really move the needle for me whatsoever. But things are different now. I think golf as a game has just got more popular over the last 5 years. I think that's it. It's just a more important sport.
And I thought you were going to say over the last 5 hours.
Yeah, over the last 5 hours as well. I think when it comes to the Olympic movement, I think in those five rings, I think we can find a golfer's heart in there somewhere. And I think that the medals will be worth a lot more this year than they were in Rio. And I think if we happen to have an Irish winner at the end of the week, then so be it. I'm personally looking forward to Rory McIlroy winning gold and running around Tokyo with a tricolour around his neck with rebel songs playing and revealing himself as a true Irish patriot as things go on. But it could be himself or Lowry. They're both very very close in those scores at the moment. So we'll keep you up to speed on that as they come home, and Lowry just about to finish off there. One thing we should mention as well from last night, a brilliant win for Bowes beating Dudelange 3-0, and to stay progressive the next round to play Pauk. Gavin Comiskey in the Irish Times writing here that Pauk just beat Feyenoord 2-1 in a pre-season friendly, so the standard goes right up. But a brilliant moment for them once again last night at the Aviva Stadium, and brilliant financially obviously for them progressing through the rounds in the Conference League. Adrian, I just do want to tee you up here for something by running through some of the front pages and leads and the sports pages this morning, because I guess the papers are kind of running 24 hours behind, more than 24 hours behind really, reacting to yesterday morning's results in Tokyo, which is of course Fintan McCarthy and Paul O'Donovan winning gold. There is the front of the Irish Times sports section: Ireland's rowing revolution strikes gold in land of the rising sun. We've got the Irish Sun next up: Skibbereen, white and gold is their front page headline. Cork pair row to Olympic win, first Irish top spot since 2012. And all row shade of Vahawalia, Fintan Paul as good as gold is the back page. The Mirror meanwhile, their front page is rowing for gold, historic day as pair win at Tokyo Games. The back page is row stopping us now. The Irish Star meanwhile, black gold, they'll row through Porter and Skibbereen, laughs medal champ. That's the front of the Irish Daily Star. And we want more, we owe UI, as they're talking about Paris and the next Olympics already. The Irish Daily Mail front page, well, it's talking about HSE and the jabs as good news one. But good news two is our golden boys row into Olympic history. And the back page is pride of a nation. As you can see, there's plenty of Rassi Erasmus stuff in the sports pages as well this morning, which we'll get to a little bit later on. The Herald goes with rowing heroes already making plans for Paris. We have a copy of The Echo here as well, which as you can imagine is going big in it. Skibbereen, white and gold. The Irish Examiner then go with golden boys, and they've got a nice little spread on the front of their sports section. Olympic champions McCarthy and O'Donovan rewrite rowing history. And there is the front of the Irish Examiner this morning. Skib erupts in green, white and gold. Adrian, I think you're putting these guys on a real pedestal, especially Paul O'Donovan. I think you're, as I watch Shane Lowry tap in there on the 18th, you're putting him almost above Shane Lowry as one of the most likeable Irish sports people currently playing.
It got us thinking yesterday about who exactly is when we watched Paul O'Donovan and the success he's had and where he stands now in the great sort of Olympians of all time. And he is absolutely right up there now. And, you know, and how likable he is. And so you tie all those things together, and we've just been talking about Kelly Harrington and Aidan Walsh, who certainly tick that box as well. But it got us wondering about who exactly it is that's Ireland's most loved active sports person. So it's a, you know, there's a niche-ness to the poll on, but we stuck it up, and like we were thinking when we shut off a few names yesterday, and it was the four names we put up in the poll here. He was obviously one of them. Shane Lowry is up there. Kenny Taylor obviously is up there. Seamus Coleman is up there as well. So there were the four names we went for, and I'll give you a bit of a flavour of some of the other names that came in yesterday when we went at it as well. But as you can see, it's Shane Lowry really who's dominating it here, and he's over 50% of the vote. Then you've Katie on about a quarter of the vote, and then it's kind of split between Paula Donovan and Seamus Coleman, who's bringing up the rear on it. But yeah, that's the way it goes. And I mean, it's a good snapshot. There's about 1,000 people who voted on it so far, and we'll keep the poll running over the course of the day. So anybody who's tuned in and wants to get involved, jump on there and cast your vote. It looks like Lowry has sort of won the day. There was a few other people as well that we got into. Kelly Harrington certainly in the mix. Joe Canning is probably in the mix as well, and it's not really a thing that lends itself that well to a GAA player in the parochial nature of GAA players that, you know, if you're very good for Galway, then you're probably hated by Kilkenny and Clare and a few more as well. But I think Joe Canning is probably in the mix, and particularly for the week that's in it. Tommy Walsh talking during the week saying that he's universally loved, so that'll do for me. Padraig Harrington obviously is in there. Rory was certainly a name that came up when we put it out last night. It's incredible that he still divides opinion, that we can't all just get behind a guy who is really good at golf and lives up the road. But look at, there we go. He definitely needs to be on that extended list. Aisha McFerrin, World Cup hero. Keane Lynch probably deserves a shout there. Mick Conlon, Tadhg Furlong, Rachel Blackmore, one of the other names that's mentioned. So look, there is an extensive list there, but I think those four, Katie, Lowry, Paula Donovan and Seamus Coleman were probably the four that came through. Tough to pick between them on. What's your order?
Ooh, it's a tough one. Like I do think that when we did the sports moments of the decade in 2019, wasn't it, at the end of the decade, Shane Lowry actually beat Katie Taylor in the final of Ireland's greatest sports moment of the decade, which I wasn't surprised, but at the time there was probably a recency bias given he had just won the Claret Jug in 2019. But I do think that there is just this general love for Shane Lowry, which is unmatched by anybody else in Ireland. And I think that if Shane Lowry were to win gold here, for example, this weekend, I think that would be heralded as right up there with maybe not right up there with the Claret Jug, because it's not as big a deal in the golf world as Claret Jug, but it would be the moment of these games, really, wouldn't it, if he were to do that. And it's no disrespect to anybody else in that poll. I think they're all absolute heroes at this stage of the Irish sporting public, but I just think Shane Lowry is just the hero, really.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think I'm surprised actually that Katie is so far behind, because like somebody who changed the face of a sport and actually changed the face of women's sport in this country, nobody has a bad word to say about her. She touches people from 5 to 105. She's very charismatic when you meet her, and I think I am actually surprised that she's not further up the list on, to be honest with you, because of everything that she's achieved. I think that, like, I know that she says herself about the stuff that she's achieved after 2012, but I do think that that's the headline of her career, to be honest with you. Like, the fact that she was responsible, let's call it as it is, for having the sport in the Olympics to begin with, and then to go on and win it. So I think that that's certainly the big appeal around Katie. But, like, with Shane Lowry, he's you, you're him. That's the Lowry appeal for me. Like, he came from nowhere, obviously, in the Irish Open. We all felt a part of that win then. We feel a part of him now. There's definitely that everyman aspect to him. And I can certainly see why he's topping the poll in that way. But Paula Donovan probably suffers on, because we only see him once every 4 years, really. Like, I know with the Worlds and stuff, he tends to pierce the consciousness, but I think that's probably a reason behind that. And Seamus Coleman benefits, conversely, from not having gone to United or Liverpool, because then he doesn't cop the hate from everybody else. So good, he benefits point. Probably from staying at Everton.
So people can still vote on your profile, Adrian?
Yeah, hop on there, and we'll keep the poll rolling till this evening, probably.
Okay, we are going to Tokyo in just a moment. It is 7:47 on this Friday morning. OTBAM is brought to you by Gillette. Good morning, start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Let's have a look at what's coming up over the course of the next couple of hours. Irish Athletics in the company of Cathal Dennehy coming your way in just a moment. We'll be chatting about the boxers overnight as well. Aidan Walsh securing a bronze medal at least. Kelly Harrington progressing in comprehensive fashion. Ronan Mullen will be with us to analyse both of those fights. And look ahead as well to Kurt Walker, who, let's not forget, is fighting on Sunday morning for a bit of a super Sunday at the Olympic Games. Olympics latest then, Will O'Callaghan coming your way at 8:20. Anything you might have missed, he'll be bringing you up to speed. Our GAA quick picks are coming up then at 8:30 as we look ahead to four massive fixtures across both codes this weekend. Alan Quinlan will be with us to talk about Reply Guy Razzie and plenty more besides ahead of the second test in the Lions Tour at 8:40. A crappy quiz coming your way at 10 past 9. And then John Giles in conversation with Nathan is coming your way at half past 9. So that is the menu set for you this morning. Rory McIlroy, as you mentioned, comes off the course with a 66. Shane Lowry comes off the course with a 65. They're both on 7 under par, Adrian, I think, as they move into round 3. Their leaderboard is starting to get a little bit more stacked as well. You're seeing the likes of Hideki Matsuyama and Colin Morikawa making moves today.
Would love to have seen McIlroy just hang on for that par on the 18th. On that, you're hoping now almost that Carlos Ortiz comes back to the pack a little bit. You know that you don't want to be tomorrow. He's already in the clubhouse today with a brilliant round 65. But they you'd like to have seen McIlroy maybe a little bit closer. But look at, you'd always say with him, if he's within touching distance, he's got a shout. And we'll be more interested now than we were when today started out. That's for sure.
What else are you looking forward to this weekend?
That's probably going to be right up there. I'm looking forward to seeing the fact that the Athletics have now kicked off. So I'm looking forward to, like, there is definitely something a bit more special, and we'll talk to Carl about when he's on, but there's definitely something a bit more special, I think, about the Olympics when it becomes less fragmented, in that it's not at 100 venues anymore. It's all getting very sort of, the circle starts to close in on the main venue, and I think that there's something a bit more special about that, so looking forward
and
to getting
to that. And we can go to the main venue right now. Cathal Dennehy, good evening to you. How are you keeping?
Very good. It's absolutely lashing rain as of the last 45 minutes in Tokyo, so it feels very Irish here in the stadium.
Because on the television coverage this morning, it looked as if a certain section of Tokyo was getting drenched, and everybody was talking about maybe like great humidity in the stadium, and not only that, but this incredibly fast track that was going to be conducive to amazing times and perhaps records tumbling left, right and centre.
Yeah, it's definitely a very fast track. We've seen evidence that this morning, Marie-Jose Talou of the Ivory Coast in the women's 100-metre heats, she ran 10.78. Elaine Thompson of Jamaica, the reigning Olympic champion, ran, I think it was 10.82, and she was jogging. I mean, there's athletes, certainly spikes and new footwear technology is playing a role, but there's no doubt that this is a fast track. And generally, I mean, 90% of the time here, the weather has been ideal for sprinters. They love it warm. Distance runners, not so much with the humidity, but it's perfect for fast running. I think we're going to see some lightning times over the next 2 days as those 100-metre finals get going.
Let's talk about Tom Barr. Were there any nerves on your part watching him come home and on that home stretch? I guess he was helped a little bit by knowing that Warholm was right beside him.
Yeah, I think he was. I think as some of us in the press tribune, I suppose, were a little bit skeptical, I guess, as he was going around the last bend. He was back in about fourth. But he explained afterwards that basically he'd had a chat with Warholm, the A-list star of his events, the alpha, I suppose, of the 400-metre hurdles, the world record holder. And Warholm was one lane outside him, and he told him in the warm-up, look, I'm going to go out easy. I'm not going to go too hard. You know, it was first four out of eight to go through automatically. So it was very kind of soft, I suppose, qualification criteria. Wasn't really going to be at risk. And I think perhaps what lulled Thomas into a bit of a false sense of security was that Warholm, he said to us afterwards, he was like, Warholm going out slow was probably still my fast. So he assumed he was probably going a bit quicker than he actually was going through that first 200. And then as he came around the last bend, that he got a bit of a fright when he saw two guys come up on the lanes inside him. And then suddenly he realized he was in fourth. So he said, I better put the hammer down. But as always with Thomas, once he does put that hammer down in the last 100, there's very few people like him in the world who finish as well as him over the last 50. And he moved from fourth up to second, automatic qualifier. And also what helps is it gets him a good lane for the semi-final. He was quite pleased with it. The time was nothing special for him. Not bad, not particularly good, 49.02. He's run 48.39 already this year. But, you know, early morning, first time in the stadium, drowned in sweat with the humidity and the heat that was here this morning before the rain broke. I think he'd be quite pleased with it. And I was saying to him afterwards, like, you know, just looking back on two of his best championships, the Europeans in 2018, the Olympics in 2016. From his first round to his second round, he took off about 7/10 of a second both times. Now, doing that again before Sunday's semi-final will put him at about 48.3, 48.4 if he can find that improvement again. He's going to need to be honest, because the semi-final draw is already out. He's in against Carsten Warholm. He's in against Rai Benjamin. In my mind, if they don't fall over, they're going to be the gold and silver medalists. And there's three semi-finals. So he has really got the bum draw here, because only the top two go through. So I think unless something happens to Benjamin or Warholm, he's going to be running for third place in that heat, or fourth place, and it's going to be all about the clock. And I think he knows himself it's going to have to be low 48 seconds, perhaps even high 47 seconds. His national record is 47.97, and that he's going to have to come pretty close to that to be into the final.
Right, so he's right up against it. I was going to ask you if Samba was going to be a contender for the gold or silver, because we actually didn't get to see him perform because Kelly Harrington was on TV earlier on at that same time. So you're writing him out of the gold and silver medal contention, Samba.
I am. He was the alpha dog, I suppose, about 2 years ago, or right. 2018, I think, was his best year. And since then, I guess he's had a few injury problems. It's basically Warholm and Benjamin for gold and silver, and the Brazilian young guy. I think he's only 21 years old, Alisson dos Santos. He's really, really impressive this year. He's third fastest so far this year. Again, is running low 47 seconds. So much can go wrong in the 400 meter hurdles. Thomas realized that very quickly in Oslo the last time he smacked the first hurdle and fell. So there's so much room for calamity that it's all about just getting into that eight-man final. I mean, in Rio, he made the eight-man final and a guy falls third, one of the contenders in the final. So suddenly down to seven men, then you get a disqualification, you get someone hitting a hurdle. You never know what can happen, but it's going to be, he's going to need the race of his life on Sunday afternoon, or I think it's Sunday evening Irish time, Sunday evening Tokyo time, Sunday afternoon Irish time.
Are you confident that that's going to come for him?
I think it's about 50-50.
Right.
In fact, I'd say if you were a bookmaker looking at it, you'd probably say it's more 40% chance. I think there's probably, like, he's, unless a miracle happens with Warholm and Benjamin, he's not going to make the top two in his semi-final. So you're talking about two fastest loser spots or time qualifiers to go across three heats of 24 athletes. And I think there's probably 6 to 7 to 8 athletes equally as strong as Thomas here. So you're talking about 8 athletes or so competing for 2-time qualifier spots. So it really is cutthroat. If he'd got an easier heat draw, he could have competed for that first or second place in the heat. He's unfortunately in with the Uber champions, two, the fastest men of all time. I think he's fastest man of all time and the third fastest man of all time in history. And he's unfortunately in against them in an Olympic semi-final. So like we said, he's really, really up against it. But again, he's a championship performer. He said he has lots more in the tank and he felt good out there today. So I'd expect to see him go much, much quicker on Sunday.
You're really managing our expectations here, Carl, I have to say, in that I don't feel that confident now listening to you. But come here, look, how different of a race is it for Tom Barr if he's effectively running against the clock? You're saying he's not really racing against his opponents here, he's running against the clock.
Yeah, I guess the 400 hurdles is always that game because of their stride pattern. You know, Thomas takes 13 strides between the hurdles, I think it is, up to hurdle 6 or hurdle 7. And, you know, that's something that's been rehearsed so many times his whole life. He's been doing this now for over 10 years. He's been running this event. So as he said himself to me recently, he's like, I could run the first 5 hurdles with my eyes closed. You know, the stride pattern is that set. So it really is about staying in your lane. But at the same time, what can so often happen is that you can get thrown off. In his semi-final, he's in lane 4, and I think Warholm's in lane 3 on Sunday. So what he's going to see once he gets to that first hurdle, because Warholm goes out like an absolute bat out of hell. Now, he took it easy this morning. He is not going to take it easy in his semi-final. He's going to be trying to lay down a statement because he'll have 2 days rest before the final, and he's in against the other big contender for gold. So I think Thomas is going to see Carsten Warholm come up on the lane inside him after about 50 metres, and the key is then really not to panic, to be aware that will happen and to just run his own race. Like we said, it's more than likely going to be a race with 4 or 5 other men to get that third place, to get that fourth place, and then to check the clock and just hope for the best. But like I said, I wouldn't be hugely confident he can do it, but I would certainly not be betting that he wouldn't do it at the same time, because we've seen time and time again, once Thomas gets on the big stage, and he, of course, with no fans here, it doesn't really feel like the big stage, even if it's a beautiful, massive stadium. But once he does get into high-pressure situations, he tends to thrive. So I think a lot of people will be waking up on Sunday morning and hope he does the same again.
Yeah, it's going to be an unbelievable couple of days in that event. Just to go through some of the 800 metres, then I guess Nadia Power on the post-race interviews on television came across as the most disappointed.
Yeah, Nadia was certainly, you could see maybe devastation's too strong a word, but it's certainly huge disappointment. Again, it was only later, probably when we were chatting to her, that she did mention that she was sick last week at the holding camp. She spent a few days in bed. And she immediately followed that up with, I don't want to use it as an excuse because it's not an excuse. I felt better by the end of last week. I think it was good to see that, you know, she was like, look, maybe mentally it threw me off, but she said physically I was back to normal. I had no reason not to run my best out there. She didn't run her best. There's no point pretending. I mean, you know, sometimes I think even on Twitter there last night, I said about one of the rowers underperforming, and like Philip Doyle and Salita, and people took offense to that, the statement of underperforming. But I, as I said back to someone, if you don't say that these athletes underperform when they do underperform, then it's insulting their ability, because, you know, Nadia is not an athlete who's running 203.7 if she gets it right. She's an athlete who's running 201, maybe 2 minutes. Same with Chiefer Clare Butner, who ran 204.6 today. She's an athlete who should be running around 201, certainly 202, and that's the expectation she would have set for herself. And to fall 2 to 3 seconds short of what they probably thought they should be running today, there's no doubt that all of them, all three of the 800 metre girls, are going to walk away disappointed. I think specifically Nadia and Chiefra, they, in fairness to them, they gave it a go. They did everything right. They went through into the bell in about halfway in about 59, 60 seconds, got to 600 metres in 130. They tried their best to keep up with the best women in the world. But there's really, sometimes it's just, there's no reason for it. You know, they gave it their all. They got to 650 and then the tank just ran dry, really. And they had very long last 100 metres trying to get to the line. But that, maybe they could have paced it a bit better. Maybe they could have gone off a bit easier. But then you're essentially saying, in that scenario, I have 0% chance of qualifying. I'm not even going to try to qualify and make the top three. And they didn't do that. They gave it a go. It didn't work out. Sometimes it's just a question of talent. Sometimes for them, it's a case of, I guess, progression in their career. They're not quite strong enough to keep up. They don't have the years of training that some of their rivals do. And I think we will see a lot of these girls. They're young enough. We will see them back at World Championships next year in Eugene, over in Oregon. We'll see them at Europeans in Munich next year. And we'll certainly see a lot of them back in Munich. And I think for the experience, for this weird pandemic games experience, it's been, they'll all be the better for it.
How much of it is going to come down to, in those future meets that you talk about, just to learning the street smarts and learning almost what this level is like? I mean, it's, there was a couple of unfortunate moments maybe in Shifra's race where she kind of clipped an opponent's heel, I think actually twice in the race, and maybe just with a bit more of an aggressive race position, which probably comes with confidence, that doesn't happen in future?
Yeah, I think that's certainly... You know, it's something that has happened to Shifra a few times, both today and at the European Indoors. She was kind of almost running into the back of people. And I guess it was surprising for her because she is a product, I guess, of the NCAA system. She went to Villanova University. And if there's one thing that teaches you, it's race craft. You know, you're in against so many athletes who are better than you. You're racing, you know, I don't know, probably 20 times a year you might be racing. So you really do learn how to maneuver around the pack. Shifra today, maybe it wasn't her fault. I just saw those stumble moments like you mentioned. I'm not sure how at fault she was for them, but it's certainly, you know, when you're in a situation like she was in where, you know, even if maybe you run your best, you might only get fifth or sixth. You really do have to do everything right to have any shot of being competitive. And unfortunately, you know, those little errors, that little quarter second or half second, they might have cost her. Ultimately, they were the death knell for her chances.
And when it came to what Nadia Power was talking about afterwards, she just said she felt she didn't really have the legs at a certain point. And I guess, does that come down to almost not knowing where you're at until you actually race at a level like this? And I guess when it comes to Paris and all the big meets between now and then, she will have had the experience of the legs going or the legs not being available to her and kind of knowing how to maneuver that situation in future.
I think so, yeah. People have to remember, I suppose, with Nadia that this is essentially her first year as a real full-fledged senior. Like, she won a European under 23 medal 2 years ago, and obviously pandemic paid to everything last year. And then she came out earlier on this year, she ran 2:00.9 to break the national indoor record that was quickly broken by Shifra over 800. And she got so much well-deserved, I suggest, exposure for that and attention for that and praise for that. And it was a brilliant breakthrough. But I think ever since, for whatever reason, and I'm sure probably Nadia and her coach, Enda Fitzpatrick, are probably the only people who really know it, she just hasn't quite been able to hit the same level outdoor, that sort of 2:01, 2 minutes kind of times that she was able to do indoors. And I think they'll probably learn a lot from it, though. And I think what we're probably seeing with some of those 800 meter women was that the new qualifying system probably just took the edge off a lot of them. Nadia had been pretty safe ever since March, but not entirely safe under the ranking system to qualify. Chiefer Clary Butner was very much not safe. Same for Louise Shanahan, who only qualified on the last weekend. They had to go running around Europe throughout May and June to try and get their qualifiers under that world ranking system. And I think by the time they got here, I wouldn't say like a case that they're cooked, but certainly if you're preparing to peak on a championship, ideally you wouldn't be traversing Europe, I suppose, for most of May and June. But again, they didn't have much choice. If they wanted to be at the games, that's what they had to do. And I suppose on a positive note as well, I mean, Louise Shanahan is, you know, she wasn't happy with her time. She ran 2:03. She was probably a lot closer to the field than Nadia and Schieffer were, but she came through. And I mean, what a breakthrough it's been for her this year. She ran 2:01 indoors. She wasn't going to be going to the games all along, and then pulled it out of the fire on the weekend of national championships. She won nationals, got big bonus points there, and then she went to Lucerne 3 days later and ran a time quick enough to just sneak in on the rankings. And, you know, she came through today, and I think she was a great example, Louise, of, you know, it doesn't always have to be about qualifying or even running personal best sometimes. And I'd be hesitant to say, you know, that they're happy to be here, but in some cases, an athlete as young as her and as progressive as her should walk off the track. And even if they finish seventh, they should be smiling, as she was, and be extremely proud, knowing that this wasn't even on the radar 6 months ago. And now she's an Olympian. As she said, if the worst thing that happens today is that I became an Olympian, so be it. You know, that's a pretty good day. And I think now it'll be great to watch them looking towards Europeans next year. I mean, the Brits, like, people, they have a couple of athletes now running in the 156s, 157s. They've taken it up such a high level. But there's no reason that all three of those girls who ran the 800 metres today can't be looking towards the Europeans next year and saying, I can be in the 800 metre final, and looking towards the World Championships and saying, I can make the World Championships semi-final. And then maybe thinking 3 years down the line, can I possibly get good enough to make an Olympic final? And they'll have learned a lot today.
For sure. The one other event that kind of caught our eye just watching on television this morning, Cathal, were the heats for the women's 100 metres. I mean, over 100 and over 200. I think we're set to have some unbelievable battles over the next couple of days. We saw Dina Asher-Smith's first run out, for example, slightly beaten narrowly in her heat. Who impressed most across the heats for their 100? Because we only got a few of them on TV.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Marie-Jose Talou of the Ivory Coast was really impressive, 10:78, which is just an astonishing time. But I think the big comeback for me was probably Elaine Thompson-Herah, the 2016 Olympic champion from Jamaica in the 100 metres. She was kind of always second fiddle until 2016 behind Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce. Now, it's going to be a really interesting final. I don't think the final is at 1:50 p.m. Irish time tomorrow, so it's a nice, friendly, I suppose, sociable time for all the Irish people who've been staying up half the night. And again, the men's final is lunchtime on Sunday as well at the same time. So it'll be a good, those kind of blue ribbon events of the games to not have to get up in the middle of the night to watch them. But I think it's going to come down to, despite what Talou ran today of the Ivory Coast, I think it's going to be a Jamaican head-to-head. It's going to be the sprint queen, the two-time Olympic champion, I think four-time world champion, Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce, versus the reigning Olympic champion, Elaine Thompson. I don't know who's going to win. The one thing I know for sure is that Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce is going to lead to halfway. She has, they call her Mommy Rocket. She's the mother of a child as well. And she absolutely rockets out of the blocks. There is no one in the world, there's no one in history who has ever, no female sprinter who's ever started like Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce. She'll be in front after 30 or 40 metres, but then Elaine Thompson has the better finish. She has the better last 40, 50. She'll be mowing her down. And to be honest, I have no idea who's going to win. I suspect, just going off championship caliber, that it'll be Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce, but that'll be a cracking race to watch. And to be honest, I think it's actually the race I'm probably looking forward to a lot more than the men's 100 metres, even though the men's generally gets the most hype. But in the post-Bolt era, we don't have that kind of A-list star. Trayvon Bromell will probably win the men's 100 metres. Again, like Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce, got the best start, can bring it home and has some championship pedigree. But I think in the women's 100 metres, you have those two truly all-time greats of the event in Elaine Thompson and Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce going head-to-head. And then you have people like Dina Asher-Smith, Britain's golden girl, of course, and then Talou coming out of nowhere as well. So that's going to be a hell of a dust-up for the medals.
Yeah, it's going to be a brilliant couple of days. What is it like in the stadium, Cathal? I presume it's fairly impressive.
It's very impressive. It's beautiful. Thankfully, they painted the seats a different color as I look around here, so it doesn't look like it's as empty as it is. But I think the silence is still quite eerie. You know, even talking to some of the people from World Athletics yesterday in the media center, a lot of them were kind of saying that, you know, like the swimming has kind of got away with a little bit of an atmosphere because athletes are able to go watch. And being an indoor venue, that noise is kind of exacerbated. Obviously, it's open air here, and there's not going to be that. A lot of the athletes who've competed will already have to ship out of the village and ship out of Tokyo within 24 or 48 hours. So there's not going to be that many athletes here. And obviously there's no cheering in the press box. So there's not going to be much of a cheering or much of an atmosphere. And Thomas Park, and I said, he came out this morning and it felt a bit weird. And he was looking around just to try and find an Irish face. And it was actually the photographer, Brian Keane, was the one he saw. So he was like, right, at least I've seen one Irish person. It kind of feels more like a familiar championship setting, but it is strange. I don't know. I was saying to some of the journalists, they need to like pump up the soundtrack or something, because it just feels kind of wrong almost on the athletes, you know, that this is the thing they've dreamed about for 5 years. And just you get it at national championships and you get it at the Diamond League and stuff, but just when it's the pinnacle of the kind of Olympiad, that 4 year, 5 year cycle that we've had now, you just think, isn't it a kind of a shame that they'll cross the line for the best moment of their careers, for many of them the best moment of their lives, and it'll just be met with a silent soundtrack? It's a pity, but I don't know. We need to, the DJ hopefully can work some heroics in the days to come.
Fingers crossed. Cathal Dennehy, great stuff. Thanks a million.
Cheers. Chat soon.
We have to react to Aidan Walsh's success overnight. Ronan Mullen, you called this during the week that this was going to be a really good shout for an Irish medal, and he has got bronze at least.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. And we talk and we put such an importance on the draw, but the draw is only as good as your performances. You have to go in and deliver on a reasonable draw. This was by no means a gimme. He was really impressive in his last fight. This was an altogether trickier one, I would say, just given the style that the Mauritian brought to the table. But he quickly sort of navigated his way in the early going. Bit of a battle of the jabs at the start, then he started to land, and as is Aidan Walsh's wont, he frustrates his opponent to such a degree that they basically can find a route back into the fight. If he gets a lead, you can't claw him back. And just a remarkable story that the Walshes have been one of the takeaways from these Olympic Games, and his story's not over yet. He's got an Olympic semi-final, and if that interview's anything to go by, he's not happy with bronze. He's going to try and upset the number one seed in the semi-final.
It's true what you say about him frustrating his opponents. Like, his opponent Mervyn Clare this morning literally punching air at times in that second round when he knew he had to go after it.
Yeah, I think Billy Beane would love Aidan Walsh. This is like the prototype of a moneyball boxer where there's like no wasted output, no wasted motion. Every punch he throws is meaningful. There's a purpose behind it. And similarly, as you're alluding to there, his movement around the ring, just he owns the perimeter of the ring. And just as you think that's where he wants to reside, he'll pop in and score a shot in the middle of the ring as well. So you just don't know which way to turn. I know the caliber of opponent's going to step up massively in the next round, but he's after dismissing two very different styles of fighters in the previous round, a very aggressive fighter, which he had to neutralize to the best of his abilities. And he did that, as I was saying, like it was borne out, his frustration was borne out by the fact that his opponent in the last round was docked 2 points. And similarly in this one, his opponent was swinging for the fences and just couldn't land. There was probably a little bit, the referee was maybe warning Walsh that he was a little bit overzealous in his moves of evasion, if you want to frame it like that.
It's the referee telling the Italian players against Belgium to stop the time wasting.
Yeah, 100%. I know. And it's such a sprint finish, amateur boxing. And some of the fights at this Olympics have been crazy, like the way they've toed and froed. But I found, for the most part, in the Irish fights, whatever the pattern established in the first couple of minutes tends to define the fight. That's just the way the judges seem to be scoring it. And Aidan Walsh knew, with that first round in the bag, and second round was a little bit dicey, but with that one too, by the time it got to the deciding stanza there, he knew it was just a matter of staying on his feet. If he stayed upright, it didn't matter what the judges thought. So just unbelievable. As I think Neil said on Twitter, if it wasn't for Skibbereen and Belfast, we'd be a little bit goosed, but they've delivered massively for us. And as I said, the story's not over yet. And boxing, having come on with Nathan on Monday on a bit of a downer after watching two defeats that morning, like we're very much on an upward curve now, I think.
The morning to your own. Looking at the interview afterwards, it's a brilliant event. If anybody hasn't seen it, definitely catch up on it today. It'll do your heart an absolute wonder. It's a brilliant thing. But just he made a really interesting point about the coaching that jumped out to me about the two lads, and it's a bit like being in a computer game, and he's just acting out their orders. And we were all so concerned, obviously, after Billy Walsh left, and it's distant past now. But like a word for Zara Antia and John Conlon, what they're doing and their influence on Aidan Walsh and across that team.
Yeah, totally. Like my dealings with Zara, and more specifically with the products of his coaching. So that's everyone from Eric Donovan to Ken Egan. this, they just sing his praises to the hilt. And while Billy Walsh was like the mastermind, a great facilitator for boxing and pieced everything together, I think when it got down to the granular detail, it was Zara that like kind of transformed things in the noughties for Ireland and into this decade as well. So it's going to be very interesting. I don't want to get too ahead of myself here, but when Kurt Walker's fight hits the TV screens at the weekend and Zara and Billy Walsh go head to head, I think everybody, that's almost like a great side attraction. As much as appetizing as that fight's going to be in the ring, I think there'll be a little bit of, I think more so than ever, we'll be listening to those corner instructions in between rounds.
Yeah, well, that's going to be absolutely intriguing. What is it about Zara Antia? Like, technically, you're looking at it to the rest of us who just get carried away with enjoying the event, but you who are into the technical side of it, what is it that he does for them?
I think the best thing he does is he doesn't try and implant his philosophy on the fighter if it doesn't suit them. So like with Aidan Walsh, and you kind of alluded to what he said there in the interview, that he's got the skills to carry out the game plan, which he did, which was box and move, get in and out of range and score, like just like metronomically amateur boxing 101, you know, score, hit and don't get hit. If this was a pro fight, it'd probably be slightly different, but that's what Zara knows. And similarly, the likes of Emmett Brennan, that's not the case. Emmett, though he had been a counterpuncher earlier in his career, is very much a pressure fighter now, and that's what got him to these Olympic Games. So the best thing, and what you can preach to him, is he cuts his cloth accordingly. And that's the best thing about any coach. There have been, and you see it in other countries, where every fighter fights the exact same way. And while that tends to bear fruit in countries such as Cuba, which are, it's a very disciplined format of training, I think what we have is probably a greater array of styles, and that's been central to how successful we've been at Olympics, like across the board.
How good is Pat McCormack then, the British opponent that Aidan Walsh is going to be fighting on Sunday?
Well, I loved Aidan Walsh's interview. We could talk about the interview itself all day, but saying that Pat McCormack is fighting Ireland's Aidan Walsh, and that's the way he has to look at it. Pat McCormack will be, and I feel like I say this every time, a prohibitive favourite going into this fight, just off the resume. He is the number one ranked fighter in this division. I think his role of honour is something crazy. I think medals at Commonwealth Games, world silver medalist, I think 4 medals at European level, 2 golds and 2 silver, so... You know, just on the basis of that, he will be a favourite. I watched his fight earlier on. He had to come through a bit of hell to get through the fight. He won it comfortably. If you were just looking at the box score, you would think he won routinely, but his Uzbek opponent really put him to the pin of his collar, cut him in the last round. So that is like, this is amateur boxing. There's only a couple of days recovery. That's not going to be totally cleaned up by the time that fight rolls around. And as we touched on, Zara Antia is granular in his details, so he'll be certainly looking at that as maybe a target for Walsh. But
is that the sort of thing, Ronan, just an amateur fight like that? I mean, if it was the pro game, you'd be saying get in and pick away at it, but just over that short period of time, is that something they can focus on, or is it almost a distraction?
I think it's just trying to engender that sense of panic in a fight, because as I said, it's such a short distance that Pat McCormack is used to winning fights. If that cut reopens in the early going and Aidan Walsh, as he normally does, wins the first round, then there might just, you can just imagine the tables might turn ever so slightly. So while it won't be the basis of their game plan, I think it definitely will be flagged up. Similarly, Kurt Walker, who's I think possibly the hardest draw ever dished out to an Irish boxer, because it's not getting any easier for him, but he was cut over his right eye in the first fight and his left eye in his second fight, so he's certainly sporting the wounds of war going into this. If he comes away with a medal, it will be hard earned.
Yeah, personally anyway, I'm getting great enjoyment out of both Walker and Walsh, but in very different ways. They're very different stylistically, and Walsh will try and frustrate his opponent. Walker will probably be in a literal bloodbath if he's going to come out on top on Sunday morning. Just very quickly on that before we get into Kelly Harrington, are you thinking 2 defeats on Sunday morning, or what way are you looking?
Yeah, I'm so positive about Kurt Walker. Down the years, I just love his style. As you said, he's just brilliant, and he's got gold medal talent. And I would have said, like in my previews before the tournament, I was thinking if the draw goes his way, he could certainly get to like semi-final, final territory. The draw has absolutely not gone his way, and yet he still finds himself knocking on the door. And like this, his opponent at the weekend, you'd think after beating the best fighter in the division, quote unquote, that, you know, it's going to open up for him. He's got a former world silver medalist at the weekend, and another, like I think I was saying to you the other day, that in his first fight, or in the most recent fight against Mirza Khalilov, who's a very much a pressure fighter and played into Kurt Walker's hands a little bit, like he got in there and counterpunched him beautifully. This is going to be a bit of a fencing match at the weekend. So it's definitely going to be a skills game. And I would back Kurt Walker to beat anybody in a skills game. So we'll see how it goes. If he's got the right temperament and there's nothing in his performances today to suggest he doesn't, he's going to rise to the occasion. Whether that's enough to get him through, it remains to be seen. But I think we can all agree he's done everybody proud with those two sensational performances so far. And if he can get a bronze medal, that's the least he deserves, and all bets are off after that.
Kelly Harrington then this morning, cold, calculated, ruthless, I think is how I would describe that performance. Just so no nonsense, and I guess no surprises on your end whatsoever that this performance was ready to happen.
No, we did a good preview with Amy Broadhurst earlier in the week, and Amy beat this Italian opponent in European Under-22s tournament a couple of years ago. So we kind of knew what we were getting, and Kelly would have known it too. And you could kind of see it in her performance. She obviously won the first round quite clearly and was switching stances, as not unusual for Kelly Harrington, but she was switching from orthodox to southpaw quite regularly, throwing punches from slightly unconventional angles as if she's trying a few things out, I would have thought, which is it's a little bit of a dangerous game to play, but not that she was underestimating her opponent, but if she's ever going to get some practice in, she made the point that she's been in Japan since June 30th, and it's a full month on, and she obviously carried the flag out last Friday and is the last Irish boxer to get into the ring. So I think she was just hoping to really maximize this outing, because it's going to get a little bit tougher towards semi-final time. Her next fight looks pretty winnable, and again, I don't want to be putting the knockers on it necessarily, but you would 100% back Kelly Harrington to make at least a semi-final, and then it gets really, really enticing when you look at some of the cast of characters in that lightweight draw.
It does seem that Kelly Harrington is amazing when she's got a lead. That, in fairness, she's one of the best fighters in her division, so that will probably be her default position anyway. But how much would you back her if she were to lose a first round, for example?
Yeah, it's just, I think the stats, I don't know, has it been updated for this game, but somewhere in the mid-80% is where if you win the first round in amateur boxing, that's how whoever wins the first round basically wins the fight. So it is difficult for anybody to overcome, especially in the 10-9 scoring system. In Olympics gone by, on the old point for each punch scored, you could easily make up the deficit in one round. But it's a bit trickier now. You need to sort of establish a standing A count on your opponent or literally knock them down to get a 10-8, and that could cause a seismic swing. But I think Kelly, the beauty of Kelly is she can have it any way that you want it. Like in the qualifying tournament for these games, she boxed a professional fighter, Amadouche, who is now out of these games. She was beaten by Mira Pakkinen. More of her and none, I'm sure we're going to see in Mira at some point in this tournament. But so she beat her in quite a physical fight, and you know, it was she had to fight almost a pro style, but outboxed Amadouche in the end. Then she had to beat the golden girl, Caroline Dubois, who this Olympics might be coming ever so slightly early for her, but you certainly wouldn't rule her out of a final contention. But she outboxed her, and basically, like, it was just an experience. Like, she was able to establish experience over Caroline Dubois, tricks of the trade, a proper, like, old-school amateur boxing match, and she beat her as well. So that's the beauty of Kelly Harrington. No matter what's put in front of her here, she will be able to deal with it, and that's why I think most people in Irish boxing and beyond have good confidence in her not to falter in a fight that she should be winning.
Dubois wrote a good piece in The Guardian during the week, Ronan, a smashing piece, and spoke in great detail about Harrington and what absolutely wanting another crack at her. As you say, they met obviously in the European qualifiers in June, and there's a big age difference between them, a big sort of experience difference in them as well. Is that the way we're headed with this? How does the draw work out? And just talk to us briefly as well about, is the Moroccan in the next round?
So it's Algeria in the next round. Khalif, has done decent things at African level, but nothing major on the international scene. So barring any banana skins, you would hope Kelly would navigate that one okay. And then you're in semi-finals, so you're talking Caroline Dubois there, or the Thai opponent, who Kelly beat in her world championship victory in 2018. So whatever way you look at it, that's going to be a difficult semi-final. And like, Olympic medals are hard earned, so she's going to have to, if she wants to be competing for gold, that's the kind of hurdle you have to overcome. So I think we're all looking forward to that one. It's really getting into the business end now. Like, Sunday is going to be thrilling for Irish boxing fans and Irish sports fans. Those two fights, Curt Walker's and Aidan Walsh's, are virtually back-to-back, I think 3:30 a.m. followed by 4 a.m. So, and a bank holiday weekend, lads. So I think everybody can justify getting up to watch that one. And then Kelly into Tuesday. So quite a triumvirate of fights. And yeah, I think they all have daunting opponents. As I mentioned, Kelly's probably looking more towards the semi-final for her stiff test. But the other two lads are right up against it on Sunday.
Ronan, enjoy every little bit of it. We'll chat to you again on Monday morning, I hope.
All right, cheers, lads.
Cheers, Ronan. So Sunday morning, or late Saturday night, depending on what way you want to look at it, is going to be a momentous morning for Irish boxing.
The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
There's a young guy on it that was on the under-20s last year. He turns around to me halfway through the game because you're too old. I was like...
He was back with him. You're his coach.
Tell me you dropped him.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Quick Start Car Insurance that's ready when you are. Sort your policy anytime online at getsetgo.ie.